Hey everyone, and welcome to Chef AJ Live. I'm your host, Chef AJ, and this is where I introduce you to amazing people like you who are doing great things in the world that I think you should know about. Well, today is the fourth Tuesday of the month, which means it's time for Move Well to Age Well with Eileen Kapsoftis. She's a plant-based physical therapist, and today she's going to be discussing how you can exercise away urinary incontinence. Exercise away incontinence today. Hi, Eileen.
Yes. And everybody's so used to Kegel, and a lot of the times it can be really, really helpful, but a lot of the times it doesn't work, which is why pretty much every drugstore and department store and grocery store has an aisle full of disposable underwear options for adults. So unfortunately, it would be nice if Kegel worked for everybody, but it doesn't. So I'm going to hopefully explain why, trying to keep it as little anatomy as possible, but enough so people will understand and not go too deep. And then I want to show a couple of movements people can do if they're having some urgency or some unwanted leakage that they can do. So I'm going to go ahead and
Great. And hopefully you'll explain what a Kegel is just in case somebody doesn't know.
Yes, you're right. A lot of not everybody knows what's been around for a while because they may not have ever heard it. Okay,
Nice.
I'm going to share my screen. All right, and everybody can see that, I hope.
Yeah, right on. Move well
Okay.
to age well.
Yes. So we're going to exercise away urinary incontinence without Kegel. And I'm going to explain a little bit. It's really important that we understand what authentic human movement is because it does lead to us making much better training choices and having much better results overall. And then I always have to put this in here because if anybody does a movement that I'm demonstrating in a little while and they end up not being happy about doing that movement, I don't know what's going on in everybody's world. If you're doing something you know you've been told not to, or something in the back of your head says, maybe I shouldn't do this. Like some of the patients who've come to me in the clinic who did something in a yoga class and they go, I knew I shouldn't do it, but I did it anyway. So we want to make sure, not that yoga is bad for you. It's just some people have limited movement in different ways for different reasons. And so I don't want anybody to hurt themselves. So I just want to put that up there. So Kegel exercises, as AJ said, it's a good idea if I explain them. So Kegel exercises are the exercises that have been taught since Dr. Arnold Kegel, who we're very thankful for bringing this information to the forefront because there were a lot of people struggling with this issue, and it's considered an embarrassing issue. Nobody really wants anybody else to know that they're wearing disposable underwear or pads or any of that. And it can be quite embarrassing. And so people weren't even telling their doctor. And it just wasn't coming out. And people were just suffering with this. And this was before they made adult disposable underwear. And so Dr. Arnold Kegel was very good at getting this information out there. And he developed this set of exercises. And typically, the general understanding of Kegel exercises, and there's a little more to it than this, but is to squeeze your bathroom muscles. So if you feel like you have to go to the bathroom, you squeeze those muscles so that you don't have anything happen that you don't want to happen until you get to the bathroom and it's time to unsqueeze the muscles. Now, Kegel exercises, so you squeeze your number one and your number two bathroom muscles kind of thing. And while it can be helpful for some people, it really is, as you can read here, Kegel exercises are kind of like the first sentence in a whole book about what should be done or needs to be done to address issues if someone is having unwanted leakage. And now you can consciously work the sphincter muscles, which is what Kegel is. When you're squeezing those bathroom muscles, you're kind of working, you're controlling the sphincter. And I'm going to show you a picture of what that is, the muscles around the sphincter, in an attempt to not have something happen that you don't want to happen. But the problem is, or the misunderstanding or the inaccurate knowledge around this, and I'm not saying Dr. Kegel was inaccurate, just the general public knowledge, is that you can think about strengthening the muscles in the pelvic floor by doing like an isometric squeeze. It's kind of useless if the levator ani muscles, which I'm going to show you in a minute, are weak As the bladder fills with urine and it gets heavy, it can hold up to 2 cups of urine, it starts to put pressure on the pelvic floor muscles, specifically the levator ani muscles. And if they're not strong enough, they kind of get pushed down by the bladder, which pulls open the sphincter. And you can squeeze those muscles till the cows come home, but you are not going to stop unwanted leakage. And some people have experienced when they might have been traveling, there were no restrooms, there was no place to go, or they were in a bad situation and they couldn't get to a restroom. No matter how hard you squeeze, an accident can happen. So that's why Kegel is limited in its scope in helping to solve this problem. Now, since supporting the bladder as it fills with urine and gets heavier is what the pelvic floor needs to do. And I do kind of need to say here, it's not really a floor. It's more like a bowl. And I had somebody contact me once and tell me that after I wrote an article that was published, I've written a couple of articles on this. They contacted me to politely inform me that I was using the wrong term. And when you're speaking to the world and the world knows it as the pelvic floor, you use the term the world knows, but actually it's a bowl. It's not a floor because it's cupped, but I'm going to show you a picture and hopefully you'll get that idea. But since it's important for the pelvic floor to support a heavy bladder as it gets heavier, isn't it critical to strengthen the pelvic floor, not just squeeze the bathroom muscles? You can't consciously squeeze the muscles and resolve incontinence more often than not. Some people get helped by Kegel. A lot of people don't. And it can be helpful, but there's another issue. If you have what's called organ prolapse, which means the organs that the pelvic floor or bowl supports are dropping down because the pelvic floor is not strong enough to hold them in place, those organs will drop down. There's rectocele, the bladder can drop down, the actual bowel can drop down, the uterus can drop down. And if you have those issues and you do Kegel exercises, it may actually make the problem worse because you're squeezing against a structure that's in the wrong place. It shouldn't be there. So it's important to know these things, and you have to work the muscles that support the bladder. So you really want to be strengthening the pelvic floor if you want to be continent lifelong. Now, just a couple of statistics here. 1 out of 4 women over the age of 18 experience unwanted leakage. About 6 to 8 out of 10 older adults, both men and women, get admitted to nursing homes due to incontinence. And that's because it's very difficult for caregivers to manage incontinence with their loved ones because the bacteria that builds up on the skin, keeping the integrity of the skin healthy, it's a lot of work. And if you have somebody who's really bedbound and you have to literally roll them and you need help, taking care of that at home, it just becomes unmanageable for people. So a lot of people end up admitted to nursing homes because of incontinence. Now, men, when we look at them, currently about 3.5 million men in this country alone have incontinence right now. And here's some potential causes for men: an enlarged prostate. And I am going to show you an anatomy picture. It's like a cartoon, so don't worry. It's very, you know, kind of friendly. But an enlarged prostate, diabetes, Parkinson's disease. So these are neurological issues. And then after some type of prostate surgery, and that's very common to be incontinent after prostate surgery. The most common prostate surgery up until recent times was called a TURP, a transurethral resection of the prostate, and incontinence after that surgery was pretty common. So I think instead of doing TURPs, there's a different procedure they're doing now, which hopefully is lessening the incontinence result. Now, there's different types of incontinence. You've got stress incontinence, which when you, and many of you may have experienced this, who's watching this now, you cough and oh my gosh, you know, you sneeze. Or you jump, or you get on a trampoline for the first time in years. Typically, it's after you've had children, and your eyes get big. You're, oh my gosh, what just happened to me? Or when you're really exerting yourself, if you're bending, lifting, those kind of things. That's why it's called stress incontinence. The body's under some kind of a physical stress. And what this does is it puts pressure on the bladder and triggers the leakage, but it's because the pelvic floor is not doing its job, or the levator ani muscle, and the sphincter gets pulled open involuntarily. You got two of them, and I'm going to show you those in a minute. So And then there's urge incontinence, and that's when the bladder contracts, but it shouldn't. And it will trigger this sudden overwhelming need to urinate. Now sometimes it's not necessarily an overactive contraction of the bladder. Sometimes it's just that, oh my gosh, we've just hit that wall of, we're ready to overflow now. You better empty me because the floor just can't hold that weight anymore. We hit that tipping point. And so now you better hurry up and get to the bathroom. And then there's frequency incontinence, always going to the bathroom. And this is happening in the younger kids now because they're doing a lot more sitting, a lot more Zoom calls, a lot more computer, a lot more cell phones and texting and all of that. Even kids who are in sports are having these issues because unless the, if they're sitting on the bench waiting for their time to enter the game, there's a lot more downtime. When I was a kid, we were always on our bike, we were always out, we were always running around. That's not happening as much anymore. And unfortunately, this is seen as normal to go to the restroom in between every single class. And then there's mixed incontinence. It's a combination of stress and urge. So if you sneeze or cough, you're going to have an issue. If you feel like you have to go and you don't get there quick enough, you're going to have an issue. And then there's overflow incontinence. And this is when you're unable to completely empty the bladder. And so there's always some urine in there. And then it'll kind of exit unexpectedly. Now, here is the anatomy pictures that I said I would share. And they're more like a cartoon, just so that they're kind of eye friendly. But you can see the structures are similar between male and female. Both have the spine or the tailbone, the coccyx, both have a bowel in order to have a bowel movement after you've had a nice whole food plant-based high fiber meal. The female has the uterus and the male has the prostate. Both have a bladder, both have a pubic bone, and both have the pelvic floor muscles or pelvic bowl. And I'll show you a picture that gives you a better idea of that soon. So if someone is having prolapse, for example, it means that the opening in the pelvic floor where the uterus, this is for a baby to exit when a baby's being born, this uterus will drop down because it's not being held in proper position by the pelvic floor. The pelvic floor creates this nice tension forward and up toward the head to hold everything in place if it's performing properly. If it's not, that's another problem, or that's what's going on. Now, you have something called a pelvic core. And a pelvic core is the pelvic floor, which is in the bottom, and the diaphragm, which is on the top. And I'll talk about these two in just a moment. And then you've got the back, which is kind of an oval shape. It's the back and comes around to the sides, and then the front also, and it comes around to the sides, and it's like an oval as well. Now, all areas of the pelvic core influence and impact all the other areas. So what that means is if there is an issue with the diaphragm, with the strength or the symmetry of the diaphragm, sometimes people might have some issues going on with their spine, or they may have some serious postural imbalances or things. And so when they take a breath, the diaphragm might not be loading symmetrically. And so what that means is when the diaphragm contracts and it comes down, it's creating a pressure inside the body area. And that pressure is received partly by the pelvic floor. And that kind of loads the pelvic floor. It gives it that pressure, that kind of, it's an air, it's an air pressure thing, but it does have an impact. And then say you've got very weak, and it's not just your abdominals, it's the front of the body, but mostly abdominals. If you've got very weak abdominals, that's going to impact how healthy your pelvic floor is. The same thing with low back and back hip muscles. If those are very weak, that's going to impact the strength and the health of your pelvic floor. So overall body fitness can either help you to have a healthier pelvic floor or not. Now you can be very fit and in sports and very active and still have pelvic floor issues. And I'll explain how that can happen in a moment. But just know that all of these areas will impact the health of the pelvic floor. So this is the pelvic bowl. And you can see it's like bowl shape. It goes down in at an angle. And these muscles are across the back of the hip. So this is the piriformis muscle. If anybody's ever heard of that muscle, piriformis syndrome, literal pain in the butt. It can, if it's squeezing the sciatic nerve, it can create pain down the leg, that kind of thing. So that's really across the back hip. And then you've got some other muscles here. This is the levator ani muscles. And you can see there's openings. There's an opening to have a bowel movement. There's an opening to urinate. There's an opening behind this. You can't quite see it to exit the baby. So you've got these openings through these muscles, but these muscles are designed to be at a nice tone, which means they never really want them to go flaccid. And they have a nice tone to them, and they kind of pull forward toward the pubic bone and create a tone or a tension upward toward the head to hold all those organs in place that we saw earlier. So I want you to see where these arrows go. Now, the arrow here is pointing to the levator ani muscles, and you've got iliococcygeus, pubococcygeus, you've got puborectalis. So they're named according to where they're attached, but levator ani is an easier way. It means all of them. And then you'll see here this white area. This is a fascial tendon, so to speak. And fascia is a really cool type of connective tissue, but it connects your pelvic floor muscles to your hip muscle or your obturator internus specifically. And it's a rotator muscle of the hip. So what happens is when you are actively weight bearing, you're on your feet and you are exercising or you're very physically active, doing heavy gardening, heavy housework. Now, housework isn't really exercise per se, unless you're doing some heavy spring cleaning. But if you're doing a lot of weight bearing and you are rotating your pelvis, you are stimulating the pelvic floor muscles through this tendinous or fascial attachment. So everyone here is probably aware that most people, when they become wheelchair bound, end up incontinent. People, when they become bed bound after a certain period of time, end up incontinent. And that's because of weakness in the pelvic floor muscles. And a lot of that has to do with the fact they're no longer walking. They're no longer upright, bearing weight, and everything just gets weak. So what this means is, this good news is, when you're doing weight-bearing exercises and you're training your hips in the right way, you can impact the function of the pelvic floor. Now, here's the one of the sphincters that I said that I would share with you. Now, these sphincters, you have two of them. You have an internal sphincter and you have an external sphincter. The internal sphincter has, neurologically, it is involuntary. You don't have any control over the internal sphincter. Its job is to tell you you have to go because the bladder is full, or the bladder has, you know, quite a bit of urine in there. And so it's creating pressure. And so now the internal sphincter tells your nervous system, guess what? We need to get to the bathroom. Now the external sphincter, neurologically, that's voluntary, which means you do have control over that. So you get the message, you need to go, but you are controlling your external sphincter until you get to the bathroom. And then you decide to release the external sphincter and you now can let the urine exit the body. Now you can see here, it kind of looks like a log rolled up, but this is just a cartoon kind of a drawing of the pelvic floor. But these are nice, strong pelvic floor muscles. You can see they're supporting everything really well. Over here, not so much. Pretty weak, not supporting. And so what happens? The internal sphincter will tell you you have to go. However, because this is not supporting the bladder and it starts to drop down, the sphincters are actually pulled open. And you can do Kegel till the cows come home, but leakage is going to happen. And it's because these muscles are not supporting the weight of the bladder. So as I said, Kegel's really only the very beginning of the story. To continue the story, the pelvic floor is very much affected by the function or lack of function or impaired function of three areas of your body. Your thoracic spine, where all your ribs attach, where your rib cage is in the front, but thoracic spine in the back, between your neck and your low back, it's your trunk. Your hips, both right and left, and I showed you why, because of those rotator muscles, and your subtalar joint or your ankle. And the subtalar joint, and I've been on here and had the honor of sharing information about plantar fasciitis, and I've taught about ankles, and I've shown some anatomy, but that subtalar joint, if that's not functioning properly, nothing above can really be functioning properly. So what this means is if you've got really poor ankle function, that might be the reason that you have some unwanted leakage happen. It's potentially possible. So you could go to a pelvic floor specialist and you could use weighted cones to train your private parts. You could have internal exams. You could do all kinds of things. But if it's the ankles that are causing the problem, you're not going to get a full resolution of the issue. So this is why it's so important to understand that everything's connected to everything else. So when you see somebody who understands the whole body connection and they assess you, then you know, oh, it's, you know, your ankle, it's that subtalar joint. You're not everting, you're not inverting. I bet that's what's going on. Or guess what? Your trunk, it's not rotating properly, which means that down below is not rotating properly if you're turning from above. And I'll explain those couple of parts actually right now, starting with the ankle. So if you have decreased eversion of the ankle, which is when the heel bone moves out, now I'm not talking excessive, you know, you've got an extremely flat foot, there's no arch, you excessively pronate, that's out of balance, that's not healthy. But a lot of the times people can lack some eversion, especially if they have a history of ankle sprains, because typically the most common ankle sprain is when this bone comes out and this inverts. It's an outer ankle sprain. That's the most common. And so because of that, a lot of the times, if the person didn't see somebody who was highly skilled or knowledgeable in this area, or a lot of the times people don't see anybody at all. I worked with a lot of young athletes, you know, in their teens who had a sprain, went back to the game, back on the field, back on the court, because no more pain, they could do everything. And so everybody thought they were fine, but they never had an expert assess to be sure that the ankle function was restored fully. So this can happen. So understanding that this function here can affect the pelvic floor, mainly because that ankle motion pretty much affects every single joint in the body from the ground up when someone is moving in weight-bearing positions. And then we get that kind of a chain reaction that occurs that either supports function that's relatively pain-free or function that becomes dysfunction over time. And it can lead to unwanted leakage. Now, when it comes to hip and hip rotation specifically, if there's any limitations in one or both hips, this can affect pelvic floor function, kind of making it sort of switch off because you're not getting that tension between the rotator muscles and the levator ani, where that fascial connection is. And those pelvic floor muscles, they get stimulated by that hip rotation, whether you're turning in or you're turning out. Now, total hip replacements or severe joint damage can be a common reason that hip rotation decreases, which can lead to pelvic floor dysfunction and incontinence. Now, sometimes the opposite happens, and I'll explain that. If you have really severe joint damage and you have very limited rotation, very limited weight bearing because of the pain prior to surgery, you may have some incontinence issues. And then you end up getting the total hip replacement. And now you're functioning much better. You're weight bearing, you're rotating, you're doing all the things you couldn't do before because of pain. And the incontinence improves. Now there's the flip side to that. Someone who has a total hip replacement, but they, you know, they used to, and I won't get off on a tangent, but I think it's important for you to know this, depending on where you are in your history. There's two different ways to do a hip replacement. For up until a few years ago, the only way was the posterior access, which they cut through the glute muscle. They cut through your butt muscle, which is the most powerful, strongest muscle in the body, to get at the back of the capsule to replace the joint. And so there was a lot of healing time. A lot of, you know, when you cut through big muscles and they got to heal, oh my goodness. And you had a lot of restrictions. You couldn't bend past 90 degrees at the hip. You couldn't cross your legs. You couldn't turn in. You couldn't rotate in. So you couldn't do this. And that was because where the stitches were in the back of the capsule, the head of the femur could pop through until the capsule healed. Usually the restrictions for about 6 weeks. So because of all of that, a lot of weakness would ensue, you know, potential incontinence if the person was already sort of borderline incontinent anyway. And so unless somebody worked with the person and made sure that that hip restored full function after the surgery, incontinence could continue as time went on. And no one would connect it to the hip. That's the sad part. Now, most hip surgeries for total hip are anterior access. So they're not cutting through those big muscles. There's very little downtime. The restrictions are not as excessive because it's only excessive extension, which you're not going to do because when you walk, you don't really use full extension of your hips. So unless you try to stretch out your front hip flexor, you're not going to go past that. External rotation, which we do less than we do internal, and abduction. So they were the opposite of the others, much less restrictive. People didn't need help to put their socks on, that kind of thing. And because you didn't cut through that great big muscle, it was a much faster recovery time. So all of that to say that depending on the situation with the person, getting the total hip replacement can sometimes resolve the incontinence issues, but can sometimes cause them or make them worse. So it really depends on the unique situation. Okay. Now the good news is that wherever there might be a limitation, if it's due to muscle function, it can be improved through training or the right kind of exercise. And then the last body area that I want to show is the trunk. And if you have limitations in your thoracic spine or your trunk where your rib cage is attached, that can lead to that respiratory diaphragm not loading symmetrically, like I mentioned in that pelvic core picture. And it does impact the loading and exploding of the pelvic floor because of the pressure changes. Now, you do also need full motion in the rib cage or full rotation to have good pelvic floor function also. And a lot of that has to do with that reaction from the ground up with the ankles. A lot of people have limited rib motion, some of it's rib motion because a lot of people are doing a lot of shallow breathing for a long time. And I'm not talking about belly breathing per se. I'm talking about letting that rib cage, expand nice and full when a breath is taken. We want that nice rib cage action, that bucket filling, that bucket handle action. But we also want really good rotation. So if you struggle to turn to see when you're backing up the car, there's some rotation issues. And you may notice you have low back pain when you do that, or neck pain. And you may think, oh, it's my neck. Oh, it's my back. But more than likely, it's the trunk that's not rotating. And that can also impact the health and the function of the pelvic floor. Okay, so I'm going to go downstairs in just a minute, but there's a couple things I wanted to share if anybody's interested. I do have a Train Away Urinary Incontinence course that restores the natural function of the pelvic floor muscles by addressing the cause of the dysfunction. I teach a live class 2 to 3 times a year. I teach it through the local community college. It is an online class. And so if you go to this website, havelifelongwellbeing.com/classes, you can see the live class that's there and register for that if you're interested. It does start this Thursday. It is recorded if you can't be there live at every class in case you miss one. But it's a beautiful way for you to learn how to train. It's a 4-week class, a lot of information, a lot of education about incontinence. We do a slide presentation and then we do the live movements. So there's 4 different classes and they're progressive. I've had a lot of people resolve incontinence that way. I had one guy who said that he could drink a cup of coffee and go for a run and not worry about things. So that's pretty good. But anyhow, and then if you can't make it to the live class or you prefer to do things on your own time, I do have a virtual class that teaches the same things. There just isn't going to be any live Q&A, but it has all the same information and things that can be downloaded, lots of information. So there's that. Now, if you're somebody who doesn't have any interest in incontinence, or you have incontinence issues, but you'd also like to learn more about moving, I do have a new challenge coming up. It's next week. It's going to be my first ever mini challenge. It's only 3 days, just 1 hour a day. It is free. And so you can go to this website to sign up, mwpchallenge.com. What I'm going to do is address, there's three questions that the answers to those questions based on you, what you answer, can determine your future as far as function and pain. And I'm going to ask one of those questions each day. We're going to cover them. There are going to be a couple of workouts. There is going to be education, but knowing the answer to those questions can make a huge difference in your future. So I really wanted to share those, and I'm not going to tell you what they are unless you join the challenge. So I'm really trying to tease people and get them to come. And it will be recorded if you can't be there live. It's just 1 hour a day for 3 days. All right. So now what I'm going to do is head downstairs and show you a couple of movements that you can do that will address weight bearing, will address pelvic floor function by using your hip muscles, making sure your ankles are working right, and making sure your trunk is working right. And I will just be a moment, and I know AJ will
entertain you. I'll hold down the fort, and I'll tell everybody who's going to be on the rest of the week while you go downstairs. That was a great presentation. So many wonderful comments. Thank you, Eileen. All right. So guys, while she's going downstairs, let me just tell you about the rest of the week. If you aren't subscribed to my YouTube channel, I'd really appreciate it if you do. And even to my mailing list at chefaj.com, because every Saturday morning, we send you out the schedule of who's going to be on for the week so that you can send in questions for the speakers, which are usually doctors, sometimes chefs, and they get to the top of the queue. So tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific time, we go earlier on Wednesdays. We have Dr. Lori Marbus, and the topic is how to learn the secrets of longevity. And then Thursday at 11, Vegan Conversations with Robert Cheek, because we have 28 regular speakers each month. Each doctor or guest has their own show. When we have a month with the 29th, 30th, and 31st, you get a few more people you don't know maybe. So hopefully you'll tune in. We are back to the gym. Back to Eileen.
Yes. Yes. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Perfect.
All right. So I'm going to show you, as you learned, hopefully, if I didn't put you to sleep with all the details, as you learned, the ankles and the hips and the trunk all impact your ability for your pelvic floor or your pelvic bowl to work right to hold a bladder as it fills up with urine and gets heavy, so that you can control the sphincter because it's not dropping down, pulling it open. So what we're going to do first is I'm going to show you a couple of things you can do, a movement that you can do for your ankles, because starting from the ground up is always a good idea since the ankles impact. So as I said, that eversion, inversion is important. Now, do know that these three movements I'm going to teach, one for each body part, may not be the end all be all. So, you know, hopefully nobody's going to think, oh, that didn't work for me. I'm still incontinent, so there's nothing else I can do. That may be less than accurate. So just know that this is kind of an introduction and a starting point. So what I'm going to do is show you how to see, are your ankles everting and inverting properly? And that's a side movement. So if you go sideways like this, that's going to cause eversion, inversion. And I'm going to change my screen here because I can't see what you are seeing. And there we go. That's bigger. So now I can see myself better. So the goal here is to step sideways, because when you step sideways, the ankle bends sideways, which causes the heel to go sideways. So you can do a really simple out and across kind of a thing. Now, if you've got any sort of deficits as far as balance or stability goes, then it's a good idea to hold on to something. So I'll kind of show you from the back here what you would do. So you can step out, and you want to make sure you're really going out and allowing that ankle, see how my shin bone is going to the right, but my foot is staying planted. That's going to give me that nice heel bone response. And then coming across, and the same thing. So out and across. This is just going to, there's a lot of ways to train the ankle. This is just one plane of motion. It's the frontal plane.
but it can loosen things up, especially if you're someone who has had a history of sprains, and there's that, okay? And then of course you would always do it both sides, so now doing this side, and notice if you feel a difference if there's a symmetry issue, and you notice you can do it really good on one side, not so good on the other side. Now, if you struggle because of the size of your legs to go across the front, you can always go behind. You know, kind of like a curtsy. You can always go behind. That will allow you to get that same motion going back and forth. And I'll show you on this side. So that's just one movement of well, there's countless movements that you can do, but that's one that can sort of let you know, wow, one side just really doesn't really want to go sideways. The other side is fine. Or maybe you can go out really good, but coming back and across, you really doesn't like it. It just gives you an idea. If you got a deficit somewhere, it's time to pay attention to it and maybe seek some professional help or do some more research and do some more movements. I do have the free class on the Move Without Pain Private Club where it teaches three-plane function. I have a YouTube channel, got lots of videos out there, a lot of free access of stuff. And of course, a lot of paid content too, depending on your goals and what you want. So that said, that's the ankles. Now the hips. We talked about rotation. We really want those hips to rotate. Now, you can get your hips to rotate from the top down. If I rotate the top of my body, that's going to rotate my trunk and my hips from the top down. If I use my legs to move, I can rotate from the ground up. So I kind of like from the ground up because when you do that one, you're also mobilizing the ankles. So you're kind of getting a twofer. You're getting a two for one. So I sort of like that one better. Now, again, this depends on your abilities and your stability. And if it causes pain, this isn't no pain, no gain. That's from that delayed onset muscle soreness from people who are trying to hypertrophy their muscles and, you know, be bodybuilders and power lifters. And if they don't break down the muscle, it doesn't get sore. Then they don't gain because the muscle doesn't grow back bigger. That's where that came from. It's not about rehabilitation. It's not about fitness training per se. Okay, so if you feel pain doing the movement, your brain thinks that you're not smart enough to protect yourself and it has to protect you from you. And it will use the wrong muscles, the wrong pathways, the wrong way, trying to keep the pain from happening. And you'll literally be training in dysfunction. So don't do movements that are painful repetitively. Back up and make it smaller and then build on it. So what that means is, I'll show you rotation. So if you want to get a really good rotation, we can turn in and we can turn out on the same leg. So if I'm going to use this leg, I'm going to take this foot and I'm going to turn around in front and I'm going to turn around behind. So I'm getting a beautiful internal and external rotation of this hip and it's weight bearing. And because I'm on my ankle, that ankle right there is also responding. It's supinating. And when it supinates, it also inverts the heel. And when I do this, I'm pronating. And when I pronate, it also everts the heel. So we're getting a real twofer here. We're getting the ankle to mobilize and we're getting the hip to get some good strengthening in here to get that muscle to stimulate the pelvic floor function. If you need to hold on to something, if one of those motions isn't, maybe your body doesn't like the internal, maybe you're lacking, then start with external and only come in as far as you can. External and as far as you can. Go to where your threshold is. And if you cross the threshold and you get pain, don't cross it. But if you work to your threshold, you will see progress because your threshold will move as your body improves. Because you're working successfully and confidently and competently, you're not hurting yourself. And the same thing would go with the external. So if your body doesn't like to turn out because that hip doesn't like to do external, then just start with internal and go a little bit. Find your threshold. How far can you go? And once you hit your threshold, don't cross it. But you'll notice over time, sometimes it doesn't take long. It could happen in just a couple of days or a week. You'll notice your threshold increases. And of course, you would do that on both sides. Now, there's a device, and I forgot to bring it down. I meant to bring it down. It's called a Pelvic Core Pro. But if you go to that website that I gave you, the havelifelongwellbeing.com/classes, and you look at either the live UI class or the virtual UI class, there's a link in there, and I don't sell it. It's called a Pelvic Core Pro. It was developed by a colleague of mine, Christina Christie, who is a fellow of the Applied Functional Science Program at the Gray Institute. She developed this beautiful device that will allow you, when you do these movements, to have resistance. It's like a small air-filled ball, but there's Velcro. And so when I come out, I've got resistance. It's resisting the external. So you can really get some strengthening. And then when I come in, it's got the resistance of the ball between the lower thighs. And now you've got resistance. So you're really strengthening those muscles. It's a beautiful setup. Stays where it belongs, gives you great resistance out and in, no matter what you're doing. And I use that in those 4 weeks of classes where we progressively do movements that are more and more challenging as the weeks go on. So that's hips. Let's finish with trunk. Now, obviously with trunk, we want good rotation. That's really a big deal. And so sometimes people don't have a lot of rotation. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they notice they can go one way more than the other way. Now, the very simple thing is to just have your arms out, because your arms, you know, that lever arm, it's a physics thing. The further away from the body, the more is produced, the more is required. So putting those arms out in front of you and then rotating as far as you can, and then rotating as far as you can, that can really open up that trunk and get you some beautiful rotation in that spine. And if you struggle with getting some good rotation because, you know, maybe there's no pain, but you just kind of feel like you're hitting a wall, then what you can do is you can hold something and get this chair out of the way so I can show you. You can hold something and do, so I'm going to hold this just comfortable and I'm going to turn as far as I can turn and go this way. And so now I'm rotated left and I can take my right arm and I can reach and reach and reach. So now what I'm doing is I'm working to try to improve left rotation. It's kind of like a chunking sort of a thing. So I'm really trying to reach. You can reach under the arm, you can reach over the arm, whatever's comfortable. But this is going to really work that side that might be a little tight. And you can see I always come out of it first. And then I go in and I come out of it and I go in. So the goal here is to really get that trunk rotated. So you can see my feet are staying forward and it's all about what my trunk is doing. And then, of course, it's always a good idea to repeat to the other side. So that's a couple of ways to improve that trunk rotation. So ideally, if the ankles are performing really well and the hips are performing really well and the trunk is performing really well, your pelvic floor will be a happy camper and it will perform really well. Now, there are some things I didn't go over, which, you know, that's why it's a 4 week class. I mean, things like caffeine and alcohol inhibit your antidiuretic hormone. They essentially, they're a diuretic. They trick your body into losing fluid. So that can make it challenging. You know, there's a lot of other things that you can learn. There's a lot of tricks I teach that can sort of, if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I have to get to a restroom, there's a trick, there's a movement that I teach that sort of helps to give you a little, buys you a little bit of time before you can get there. There's a lot of things that you can do, but I can't teach it all in one show here. So hopefully you'll join me for the class, either live or virtual. And again, if you have no interest, I've got that 3-day challenge. So I'm ready to answer any questions.
All if right. Well, AJ. Thank you. And actually, I'm going to always take the ones that people submitted to us in advance first. And then if there's time, we'll go to the chat. And this first one is right on topic from Amanda. I'm a 35-year-old female who has never given birth or had pelvic surgery of any kind. I have an office job, but I stand and go for walks occasionally throughout the day. I have a difficult time holding my urine. I never have accidents, but even small amounts of urine when trying to increase my daily water intake have been creating urgency and sometimes a feeling of incomplete urination with fullness in my pelvis. No UTIs, but possible pelvic floor dysfunction. A previous doctor mentioned tight muscles, so Kegels wouldn't be a good idea for me. Any advice for at-home treatment would be appreciated.
Yeah, so that's, thank you, because that was a really full explanation and understanding of the situation. Obviously, I'm not diagnosing or treating anyone or giving specific advice, but to speak to that issue generally, you don't necessarily have to have had children or had any pelvic floor surgeries or any of that stuff in order for things not to be working right. Yes, walking is a good idea, but a desk job, typically people aren't getting up every hour and walking during the desk job. So there is a prolonged period of sitting. So when you get that prolonged period of sitting, the front muscles will shorten a little. They kind of lock short because you're sitting. So now that pelvic core is impacted because when they're like this for a long time and then you go to stand, they're a little inhibited with doing their job when you're upright. So that could be a problem. There could just be a weak pelvic core going on, which impacts the pelvic floor. You know, some people have some neurological issues, but that's rare. Sometimes that's due to, that can happen during childbirth. That can happen with surgeries and stuff. Obviously people who have neurological disorders, that's a whole nother story. But typically, you know, walking is a great exercise, but it isn't necessarily going to provide good fitness overall from head to toe. It's not necessarily enough. So strength training, those kind of things, but really making sure, as I just demonstrated and talked about, those three body areas functioning well. This person might have a history of ankle sprains and they're not functioning well. There could be some other things going on as well.
Thank you. And Adeline wants to know, what time are the live classes taking place?
Oh, they start at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, and they're an hour and a half long each day. Well, each week, once a week.
Thank you. And thank you guys for putting the question marks so I can ascertain them from the chat. That's a word. Christine says, how often and how long should we do the exercises that you demonstrated?
Yes, great, great question. So ideally, it would depend on your starting point. How weak are you? How severe is the issue of unwanted leakage? If it's some people, it's not that bad. So typically, and this is just general guideline, you would want to do at least, you know, 15 reps. And as I said, those three movements are really kind of an introduction. They're not necessarily the end all be all. They're like chapter one versus Kegel being the first sentence. So it's a good starting point, but at least 15 repetitions, maybe two or three sets. Doing them, I recommend people to do things daily until they start to see improvement. And then you can back off a little bit. So it would be at least 5-6 times a week. And then you could cut to maybe 3 or 4 times a week. But you need to make sure that those muscles stay strong and fit so that the pelvic floor functions properly.
Thank you. And then would these exercises and or the product you mentioned for prolapse work when other things have failed?
So prolapse, yes. And I didn't go heavy into that because the topic was incontinence, not necessarily prolapse, but I need to mention it because it is a pelvic floor issue. So with prolapse, what the person would do with that, and again, this is not me advising or treating, but general guideline is the movements would be started in supine and not weight bearing, because what we want to do is we want to get gravity to assist us to get the organs in the correct place before we strengthen the pelvic floor and the hip muscles. So what that means is you would lie down, you would have a wedge or a pillow under the pelvis to elevate it a little bit, so that now gravity is assisting those organs to be not dropped down where they don't belong. So, and then you would have the device on, and I've used foot placements against the wall and doing all different stride positions, wide, narrow, all kinds of things, doing the internal, external exercises as you've got gravity assist for a good pelvic. I've had people improve prolapse beginning with that and gradually progressing to where they could do things upright,
right,
and things were not in the way, so to speak.
Thank you. And this is a question from Christina. What are your thoughts on bouncing on a rebounder?
So rebounders are great. I actually have one. I got one for if the weather is really too bad. I love my walks, but I want to get some movement in if the weather is really nasty. Although I will kind of walk in almost anything. The issue with the rebounder and incontinence, if that's what they're asking about, because that is the topic of the day, I'm assuming that's what they mean. A lot of the times people will get unwanted leakage, sometimes for the first time when they bounce on a rebounder or a trampoline. And when I was doing some research in this topic a while back, I came across some studies that said that trampolines were could increase the risk of incontinence. And unfortunately, they were well-meaning, but they had it backwards because they were saying, you know, even these young athletes, these trampoline athletes were gymnasts, were experiencing some leakage, and to the point where the coaches would tell them to pad up before they started practice or in tournaments and things and competitions. And the issue is the trampoline wasn't causing the unwanted leakage. It was demonstrating or kind of opening the door to the problem. They had the issue, and getting on the trampoline exposed the issue. It didn't cause it. So if you have an issue and you're using a rebounder or a trampoline, it's gonna cause some things until you get things better. But using the rebounder isn't going to improve the problem. You need a nice solid floor to do that.
Thank you. And let's see, we've got a question. How much will losing weight help with stress incontinence?
Okay, I got to put my thinking cap on for that one. I haven't personally seen any data about weight loss and stress incontinence, so I can't speak to what the data might say. Just common sense and my professional understanding would be if there's a lot of excess weight, that would be allowing the pelvic core to be functioning at a disadvantage, which could be impacting pelvic floor. That's, as far as having, I mean, sometimes people who carry excess weight tend to have denser bones because of carrying the excess weight around, and tend to be stronger. I know when I worked in acute care in the hospital setting, if I had a patient who was large, they got themselves practically up out of bed. They needed very little help because they were stronger and used to moving weight. You had somebody who was really tiny and really frail, it would take two people because you'd have to lift them out of the bed because they were so weak. So sometimes strength's not an issue when there's excess weight. So the only thing I can think of would be the just impacting and impairing pelvic core function.
Thanks.
I really can't think of any other thing.
Pam says, if bladder drops down, what could I do to strengthen and fix the problem?
That's the levator ani muscles, the muscles that control the weight of the bladder. The goal is to get, because those muscles, their job is to push forward and up and hold everything where it belongs. So getting those muscles stronger is the wise strategy.
Thank you. Carolyn sent in a question in advance, not on this topic, but could you answer it anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. She says, I spend many hours cooking and cleaning daily, which often involves looking down for prolonged periods, such as when vacuuming or chopping vegetables. Do you have any tips to prevent a dowager's hump?
Okay. So it's funny because I have an online academy where we do live classes every week. And the first Tuesday of the month, we do student's choice. One of the students will send in their request. And for next week's class, the request is the rounded upper back, the rounded shoulders. So I was actually thinking about that topic today, preparing for that next week. So ideally, it's not necessarily because of the head being down per se. It's the not doing anything to negate it. And a lot of the times, once we get used to being forward because of gravity and the weight of the head, it just keeps pulling it forward. So it's important to do something for the upper back and shoulders to set it off. Now, there's also the front here. And I was doing some research and I came across, it was one of the other, it was a physical therapist who was doing some exercises for upper back and posture and all. And unfortunately, he never mentioned the pelvis or the lower body. And that can play a big role because if somebody's kind of like this, it automatically puts them forward. And that might not seem like much, but it's enough to keep you from getting really good extension in the upper body. So you really want to have good, strong glutes. You want to have really open front hips so you can extend really well and the front of the body can control that really well, to allow the shoulders to come back, to allow the head to come back. And typically, and in one of my free events, I taught, had people test themselves against the wall. And, you know, could they get everything back against the wall, including the head back against the wall? And they measured themselves. I had one lady who said she was a half inch. She's improved a quarter inch now. She's got a quarter inch to go. But a lot of people, 2-3 inches difference even. So you want to work. It's kind of like the whole trunk, and you want to get the front to load better. So there's a lot of movements where you're going to come up and back, and especially the shoulder, to get the shoulder up and back, because what happens is that upper thoracic spine, it needs to extend in order to get full shoulder motion here. And so if you've got a rounded upper back and it's like this, then that shoulder, I mean, if you came here, you wouldn't be able to push this any further. But if I straighten up, I get a lot more motion. So using your arms to try to encourage that upper thoracic extension is good. There's a lot of, you know, there's several exercises, but you really, the whole thing is about up and loading the front of the body and making sure that allows everything to go back well. So, as well as strengthening the upper back, but
okay,
really loading the front.
Thank you so much. Why is it called a Dowager hump?
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question, AJ. Now I'm going to have to look that up. I don't know.
Tell us next month. I don't even know what that means.
Eileen, okay,
this was a great topic and a great presentation. Thank you so much.
Glad you enjoyed it. Hopefully everybody got a lot out of it.
Yeah. Well, according to the comments, they did. It was fantastic. Okay. You guys are fantastic for watching another episode of Chef AJ Live. Do come back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific time for Dr. Lori Myris, and we'll talk about how you can experience longevity. Eileen, we have a doctor here named Dr. John Scharfenberg, and we just hosted an event with hundreds of people. He gave a TED Talk. He's 100, a plant-based doctor on longevity. So it was really interesting.
Wow, I've had a lot of patients over the age of 100 who were full of life. Yeah.
One of the things he said is no alcohol and exercise is super important. Those were two of the, he gave a bunch of tips, but those were two of the top two.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah, it'll be available, you know, soon online. Take care, everybody. Good. Thanks so much, Eileen. Bye-bye.